I've never seen a diamond in the flesh. I cut my teeth on wedding rings in the movies, and I'm not proud of my address.
We're not just building muscle, we're building men. In the quiet hours, in the unfiltered moments, in the conversations that happen before the world wakes up. This is The Gloom, where brotherhood forms in the dark so we can lead in the light, where vulnerability is strength and leadership is handed from man to man, one story at a time. Our mission is to empower, exhort, and inspire men to achieve their best selves through stories of reinvigorated male community leadership. We bring you weekly interviews with F3 Omaha PACs, ordinary men doing extraordinary things in fitness, fellowship, faith, and leadership, because we believe that every man has a story, and reinvigoration starts when that story is shared. This is The Glue in the Gloom. Shout out to our sponsors, Avior Wealth Management, Liberty Core Real Estate, Major Team Mortgage, Exclusively Eye Care, Omaha Laser Dentistry, and McNamara Law Firm. We appreciate your support.
What's it like to love your dentist? Well, you're about to find out, where healthy smiles go beyond your teeth. No drilling, no needles, and no anxiety. Relax, it's Omaha Laser Dentistry. Welcome to better. At Omaha Laser Dentistry, Dr. Bullenparty uses the Soleya laser, a CO2 laser that's used in all of his day-to-day patient care. He provides thorough exams, assessments, and treatments for things like snoring, tethered tissue, and extractions like wisdom teeth, as well as other surgeries. Check him out today at omahalaserdentistry.com. Discounts may be available for F3 Omaha members.
Now, let's get back to the gloom. And we're live, coming to you from the Nomad. We're in downtown Elkhorn. Love this place. We're back in our actual studio, where we've got windows now, so we can see the train tracks and the beautiful downtown Elkhorn. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about my man, Bogey. You may have heard his voice on the F3 Nation COT podcast, which I love. If you haven't heard that episode, I really enjoyed that. I thought you did a phenomenal job.
Yeah, especially considering Huckleberry surprised me with it.
Yeah,
like I just reached out to network to him, he's like, okay, and we talked for 10 minutes. He's like, okay, we're gonna start recording. What are you talking about? Oh, so you're gonna awesome. Do a podcast? Yeah, so he ambushed me a little bit, but it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
That is
yeah.
good to know. That yeah. I couldn't tell.
Yeah, there was no prep or warning for me. It was just, hey, let's talk. Yeah. And I literally was just trying to network with him because I missed when they were in town in summer there and stuff. So, but that's a whole nother story there.
I love it. And I just found out you're a former broadcasting professional. So
yeah.
you can kind of help critique anything we need to be doing different. In
yeah, studio. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, don't worry. I've got a list of things we'll talk about after this here.
Yeah, that's right.
You can fix. Yeah.
Well, I love it. And I'm excited to get your story out. I know it's been fun to connect with you. And we were just talking about Rizzo and we'll get into it, but take us back to the beginning, sort of where your F3 journey started, and we'd love to know kind of what you were doing before the EH.
Yeah, and I'll go back even a little bit further, because I think context kind of helps out a little bit with it. Yeah. So I was working in college athletics, and one advantage when you work in college athletics is you have access to weight rooms, nice weight rooms for free and stuff. So when I was in college athletics, I'd kind of get my lifting in or whatever it might be, or do some running. So was working at a small Division II school in Northeast Iowa, Upper Iowa University, moved here, took a job at UNO, and didn't quite have the same access to the weight room here. It wasn't, you know, as close proximity to campus. And so started running in the mornings. Yeah. And what's really fortuitous about why I share all that background is I would go lift in the mornings. I'd go lift before the athletes got in. So I was kind of F3 and on my own in small town Iowa, like 5:15, 5:30, getting out there, get a lift in, because the athletes really couldn't lift that early. Yeah. So, you know, so I was used to that. So I'd get up and run. I'd go and run at, I live by Elkhorn South. And so I'd run around, go to the campus, go to the track where the Calm first launched and was until now, about a month ago or so. But anyways, would run. And so one day I'm in the office, and Dr. Thunder was the golf coach at UNO. And so I walk into his office, and the guys that know him know he's not like the biggest chatterbox in the world. So like, you know, him and I got along, and I just mentioned somehow came up that I went for a run. He goes, oh, do you work out in the mornings? I said, yeah, I try to. I explained lifting, explained, you know, I just run when I can. He goes, well, you should try this F3 thing out.
Oh, yeah.
I said, okay. And he showed me the link. And the next day was at the maze. So, I mean, he didn't sell me hard on it. Mm. And for me, it was kind of, he didn't even go deep into the fellowship piece of it. He just, mm. yeah, he goes, it's a good group of guys, get together, work out. And with that, I was sold. The next day I was there and the rest is history.
Because where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Chicagoland.
Okay.
I grew up in the western suburbs of Chicago. My wife and I met in grad school at Western Illinois University. So I moved a little bit west.
Okay.
She's from Iowa. We then moved to Iowa, so a little bit more west. Okay. And then we moved to Omaha, so even more west. So we think we've hit our wall. Like, we don't want to go any further west, but we love it here. And really, her being from small town Iowa, me being from the Chicagoland area, Omaha's kind of like that marriage of it all. Yeah. Like it feels like home for me, and it doesn't feel like for her, like she's in a big city. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely got a lot of small town, but also some city vibes.
Yep.
That's absolutely. Really cool. Yep. I didn't realize that. So you come here, you go to the first workout at the maze.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember who was on the queue or what?
Yep.
Was the, what
oh, was I the remember so like? Much about it. Obi-Wan was queuing.
Oh, nice.
And like, if you're going to put a hymn in the queue for your for your EH, like, he's probably the guy.
Yeah.
No offense to you.
I love
but like
I
yeah,
love
you're it, yeah. You've probably turned more people off from a workout than
totally.
Me done that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's that guy because he is without effort welcoming. You know, there's just, he doesn't have to try to be that guy.
Yeah.
And that was exactly it.
Was he site queue at the time?
I think so.
He might
I'm pretty sure he was. Yeah.
Okay.
He was, because then I did my VQ there and he I worked with him to get that set up. So,
nice.
Show up there, pretty good crowd. This was, you know, I think, well, when he took over kind of on the backside of the rebirth of the maze.
Mm-hmm.
So we have 30 some guys, I think we're there, 30, 40 guys.
Yeah.
We had 6 FNGs that day.
Yeah. The maze went through this.
Yeah.
I remember that. Now that and
it was,
saying that.
It was interesting. Cause then I, you know, first time thinking that's the norm.
Yeah.
And then I realized it wasn't. And then it kind of became the norm because, you know, after I started, this would have been October of 22.
Mm-hmm.
That was right before kind of the explosion.
Yeah.
Like, you know, F3 really blowing up in Omaha. But it was not the norm, I realized.
Because we didn't have the labyrinth yet.
Mm-hmm.
We did. Yeah.
So yeah. Iditarod hadn't been like, I mean, from the West O standpoint, you went to the maze.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that showed. So again, 6 FNGs there. And DeFridge was one of the other FNGs. So him and I got EH'd on the same day. Big Unit brought him out. Dr. Thunder brought me out. And what's really funny about that is we go to the same church. We didn't know it prior to F3.
That's funny.
And we would have connected.
Yeah.
You know, it would have happened. But it connected a lot quicker because of F3.
Yeah.
And so we've become very, very good friends. And we share an anniversary date now with F3. Yeah. And we're co-queuing as we're recording this. We'll be co-queuing on our anniversary on October 6th at Wolf Den. And
nice.
And we've done that, I think, every year. Now we've just kind of partnered up for that. And it's just a fun thing to get together with him.
What about the other 4 guys? Do they still come out?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay.
I couldn't tell you their names. I think Fridge knew one of them or knew of one of them. But
okay.
A couple of them were high schoolers, were kids. And I think it was obvious they weren't going to be back. But,
okay.
But yeah. 2 out of 6 is decent. So.
Yeah, because did Dr. Thunder, I feel like I remember this day. Did he bring out like some golf students or
not that? No, no. Okay. Because the other ones were... I don't remember who brought them out, but but again, it was
they're
that
younger,
definitely that separation of I'd like to think Fridge and I accelerated pretty quickly and got involved and stuff, and so I think no offense to the guys that didn't come back, but you guys F3 benefited with the 2 best that day.
Yeah. So. Now tell us about the name. What do you remember? Oh, were you like
because
if there's 6 naming 6 guys, it kind of
it is at. it's a little rapid fire. I was actually a little bit angry at Fridge right away because I'm from Chicago. I'm a Bears fan. And so like, I'm kind of thinking like, okay, I didn't know a whole lot about how it was going to work, but I kind of picked up quick. I'm like, okay, you know, share some of those stories that, you know, I might get a Chicago name and that'd be really cool. And, but I also knew you don't get to pick. So, so they asked, you know, hobbies and what do you do? And I was really close to being Venmo. Because I said, I do fundraising. And I said, how I know Dr. Thunder. And I said, I do fundraising. And somebody threw out Venmo, and again, a lot of people there. Yeah. So there was a little bit of momentum behind that. Yeah. And then somebody said, "What are your hobbies?" And I just said, like, "Well, I absolutely love to golf. Mm-hmm. Like I love golfing. I love taking my kids out going golfing, but I am terrible at it."
Oh yeah.
And I go, "It doesn't bother me."
Yeah.
And I said, "Great, bogey." Okay. And I said, I told them, it's still true today. That's pretty generous of a name for me for golf. I'm way worse than a bogey golfer. Yeah,
double bogey.
Double might have been a little generous at that time.
That's funny.
But yeah, so it was not the, I think like most of the naming stories, it was not probably the biggest trait or thing that I shared, but they latched onto it, and with five more guys to go, they moved on pretty quick. So yeah.
Do you wish you would have been Venmo? Are you bummed that you didn't get Venmo?
No, because I love the fact that I got a call sign.
Yeah.
Like out of it, you know, like that, when I look at it in hindsight of like, you know, yeah, something that maybe fits me a little better, maybe, but the truth of it was I really kind of dove into that now and kind of owned it a little bit. And I just think it's fun having a call sign, especially one that's kind of obnoxious. So,
right. Well, So tell me this, you're bad at golf, but you still like it. How does that work?
You know, I'm like everybody, I feel like an F3, you know, former athlete, you know, was an athlete through high school, didn't play in college or anything. I'm really able to separate the competitiveness out of golf.
Mm.
And, some of that comes from, I was fortunate. I was able to work at a couple of pro events, a couple of PGA events, a couple of Korn Ferry Tour events. Mm-hmm. And when you see the pros up close and sometimes inside the ropes and how good they are, it's really humbling. I mean, we all should be aware of that.
Yeah.
But it's just that realization of, that's what the best looks like.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, millions of other people that do it.
Yeah.
And they're never going to even get close to it.
Yeah.
And so my goal is not perfection with it. Like, I can get frustrated, get angry, or I can have fun.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was always just about that getting out. And in my work and fundraising, you golf a lot with people. Like and my goal was always to just be comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I'm good being the comic relief. Like if I hit a bad shot, I need to be able to laugh it off, not, you know, throw a club.
So you don't convert more fundraisers the better you are at golf?
I think it's the opposite. Okay. I really do, because if you're trying to convince somebody to give you money, to give you a lot of money, and you're a scratch golfer, they got to wonder what you're doing with your time. Yeah. I'm like, I can at least say to them, I said, well, if I wasn't so busy fundraising, I might be able to hit the course a little more.
Right.
So, for me, it's the humility of it.
Yeah.
It's a skill that very few possess at the high, you know, type of levels. And I'm not even talking pros, but like even just like amateur golfers, you know, like us. And so I gave up. Believe me, I used to be competitive with it, tried to be good, but I kind of gave up, thought that like I have to be good.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you get to be outdoors. You get, like, if the weather's bad, you probably aren't playing golf.
Normally it's a beautiful scenery.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, and just a great way to connect with people, because you spend a lot of time together. So those conversations organically grow into, you know, really meaningful touch points.
I love it. We were watching, this goofy movie, Leo the Lizard or something at home, but there's this moment where it's this lizard that can talk. He tells this little girl, like, you're not that great, right? You're not as great as you think you are. And then she has this moment where like the weight is lifted of like trying so hard to be perfect.
Yeah.
And so I kind of get that vibe when I hear you talking about like, if I just admit like, it's okay, I'm not ever going to be pro and I don't have to be. And then I can just go.
It is. And I mean, look how many golf courses there are out there in the world.
Like, yeah.
It's not built on the fact that people are good at it.
Right.
It's built on the fact that everybody can do it for the most part.
Yeah.
And the few that can do it well, great. More power to them. I'm going to have fun.
Yeah.
Like I never want to get to a point where I'm frustrated because I miss a green, because I always miss the green.
Right.
Or I'm frustrated because I miss a putt, because I always miss a putt. Like it's always going to happen. I want it to be enjoyable. Yeah. It's something I can do with my kids and with my friends and with my family.
That's a great outlook. So you've got this awesome outlook on golf, and I'm curious, would love to hear like, so, and you were lifting and running before. Was fitness kind of on that first step side, like all kind of always part of your life, like growing up, did you play sports and stuff?
Yeah, I did. Okay. I was the, you know, kid that would try anything, you know, athlete, like, and really settled in though, football, basketball, and baseball. And I played that all three sports, all 4 years through high school.
Nice.
I was a good athlete, good high school athlete. Yeah. I wanted to play college baseball. That was by far my best sport. Baseball was my best sport, most fun. Football was the one that was, you know, kind of casual. And basketball, I just did because it was winter. Yeah. Like, yeah, I needed something to do. And I went to a Catholic school in the Chicago suburbs that was a wrestling powerhouse.
Oh, yeah.
And so that wasn't an option because I wasn't any good. I had no experience. Right. So it was, just stick with basketball. So my senior year of high school playing football, I actually suffered a spinal concussion. I was paralyzed on the field for about 20 minutes or so.
Oh my gosh.
Got feeling back and movement back in the ambulance going to the hospital. Out of that, I've shared that my anniversary of that was just a few weeks ago. I queued at Oracle and I've shared that story. There's a connection point there actually with Rizzo that I will share just right now. I was in the hospital and I wanted to play college baseball. Mm-hmm. And so this shifted my fitness journey a little bit of it. And probably impacts that golf perspective a little bit too when I share this. But in the hospital that night, spent, overnight, MRI, CT scan, all those things. I've got a neck brace on. They never wiped the eye black off my face. So like my parents are there, my teammates,
tough. Right?
Yeah. My teammates came and visited, out of a movie type of thing.
Yep.
And I'm sitting there and I've got this neck brace on and there's still eye black under my face from it.
You have pictures of it?
No, unfortunately, no pictures of that. I don't think my parents were at a place where that was their priority. But anyways, in the hospital that night, I had a dream that now I refer to as like a God touch.
Mm.
And so I'm in this hospital bed. I'm 17 years old. I'm college baseball. Like my vision at that point was I need to get healthy so I can fulfill my dream. I need to go do that. And so then I drift off to sleep and I had a dream of, in that dream, I'm playing catch with a young boy.
Mm.
And it's one of those, you wake up and, oh, that's me. Not now, that's me, and that boy's a future son. And it was that moment, split decision. I was like, I'm done with sports as far as like this is going to be it for me. Like, if this is it, that's fine, because I'm going to get better. At that point we didn't know what was wrong, but mm-hmm. but my motivation was I need to be better because I want to be able to throw a ball with my son or daughter someday. And that became my motivation to get healthy.
Wow.
And so I mentioned it. So I suffered a spinal concussion.
Yeah.
And so
did you just get hit or?
Yeah. Just a bad collision. Yeah. Collided with one of my buddies. I don't know, to be honest, if he ever knew that he was the one that collided with me, mm-hmm. Which is probably good.
Yeah.
Concussion syndromes, or symptoms, I should say, they kind of are always there. You think of people that, most people know a brain concussion, you have they're susceptible to them again. Mm-hmm. So I've got kind of weird back nuances.
Mm.
And the trainers that I rehabbed with, their guidance to me was you have to stay active.
Mm-hmm.
You need to keep your back strong. Mm-hmm. And you'll probably feel it if you get lazy.
Mm.
And so I wish I could say it's, paid off and I've got the pounds off, but that my motivation there is, to stay fit enough.
Yeah.
And I do struggle with, endurance.
Yeah.
I got a broken leg and ankle as well. That's a whole nother reason why my running doesn't, but really my back will start to give out long distance.
You notice it.
Unfortunately IPC is not beyond that reach, so I'm able to do IPC, which is good actually. I'm glad I can do that.
Did you do it this week?
I didn't because of my thumb. I didn't do it this year I had broken my thumb at the ruckus, which go figure,
brutal.
I shouldn't say broke, tore a ligament, but I didn't do IPC this year because I wasn't cleared to start lifting, and I'm kind of that. You can't be half in.
Right.
If you're going to do IPC, if you do week zero, you better do the 4 weeks that follow.
Yeah.
And you can't jump in on week four and act like.
And just try to do it.
Like you've been through it with everybody else. So that's just my personal side of that. I wouldn't feel right just jumping in and doing it. So, but those types of things, even like CSOP, can be a little bit taxing. My back just doesn't have that strength. And it's kind of one of those, it's not that I need to become stronger muscular wise in it. I just need to know my limitations.
Yeah.
So So F3 fits in really well with that because we don't do a lot of stuff like that. We mm-hmm. have CSOP, we have IPC, but when you can space those out and do those, you know, I'm good with it. So anyways, the my whole, you know, rehab, you know, based on that was I want to be able to play catch with my son. Mm-hmm. I want to walk. Like,
yeah.
I don't want to be the guy at 40, and I'm saying that as a 40-year-old today, yeah. that, you know, has to get a grab a chair to get up from a chair, right. or has to, you know, get help moving, you know, up and down stairs or whatever. Mm-hmm. We're all getting old. Like it's yeah. all it's gonna happen. It's inevitable. Yeah, yep. it's inevitable. Yep. I didn't want to further speed that up or further that along any quicker than it was going to come already. So, yeah. So yeah, I made that decision based on that dream, that vision, and the COT that I shared this year at the Oracle. I talked about that of having that vision beyond what you think right now needs to be. And I've kind of tried to model my life, you know, that way mm-hmm. from that moment forward of recognizing the bigger picture, you know, mm-hmm. live in the moment, recognize what you need to do now, but you've got to have some vision of what's down the road and have yeah. some perspective. And I think I've benefited from that. I think it's allowed me to accelerate where I need to, but more importantly, it's allowed me to be able to play catch with my kids,
yeah.
you know, and who knows what else would have happened, but I know the path that I took led me to that where I can be very active with my kids today and yeah. not have to worry about that.
I love it. It's so wild because I feel like that's exactly what happened to the quarterback in Friday Night Lights or whatever.
Yeah.
He gets hit really hard and then he has a spinal cord injury and he's yeah. in a wheelchair the rest yep. of his life.
Yeah. Right?
So like the outcome, the fact that you made it through that and are able to walk today.
Right? Yeah. I don't know. There wasn't a, hey, you were this close to
yeah.
paralyzation or any, you know, who knows.
But still, what, like having loss of feeling, was mm-hmm. it your lower
extremity? It was everything. So the analogy of it, and I can remember this feeling was, you know, I was playing defense and I go to make a tackle, and anybody that's played tackle football, whether it's in the backyard or you know, proper padded football, you've been at the bottom of the pile at one time or another.
Yeah.
And you just kind of wisely wait for everybody to get up.
Right.
You know, you just lay there because you're
right.
just,
right.
all right, I can't get up. You're on top yeah. of me. Like,
yeah.
And so you just wait. You wait for the pile and the pile never rose.
Oh.
And then one of my friends came over and said, Brock, are you okay? And I remember trying to say something like, I'm waiting for everyone to get up. And I just mumbled, like slurred mumble. Like I couldn't speak.
Wow.
And they immediately were yelling. Mm-hmm. The trainers come out. And then next thing I know, the trainers, like, I'm face down on the ground. I can hear him right here, but I couldn't turn my head to see him.
Wow.
And yeah, it was just, there's vivid ingrained memories of those moments. The you know, the smell of the grass and the, yeah. you know, what it was like. It was we didn't have lights. So it was a day game. So you had like the sun beating down on you. Mm-hmm. Like, you couldn't have asked for a more beautiful day to play football. And you couldn't have asked for a worse outcome of, right. of how it went. So.
Oh man, that's yeah. well, I appreciate you sharing that story. Yeah. It's amazing these things that happen and kind of these pivotal moments. I would be curious when you think about, I mean, obviously, right, like going from that experience to being able to do what you're doing today, mm-hmm. even with some of the limitations, right? Just knowing your body, how do you feel like you've made progress?
Yeah, it's like I don't view it as a crutch or as a yeah, you know,
doesn't
like
seem
I, yeah I know where the limitations are,
yeah,
and so like to a certain degree it's yeah I'm never gonna be the fastest, I'm never gonna be the strongest per se, you mm-hmm. know, but I also don't think it's limited me. I really don't, like yeah. you know, because when F3 came about for me, yeah, I can do that. I need to,
yeah.
you know, I need to, like, yeah, daily. Like that's,
yeah,
that's a good regiment for me to stick to. And that's really it. I will feel it in my back when I skip multiple days in a row.
Mm,
we all need rest. You know, yeah. you have to recover from time to time, but if I go 2 or 3 days, my back will tell me that I didn't.
Yeah.
And then my M will tell me, hey, you're getting a little ornery, not from the physical standpoint, but from the, you haven't gotten your cup filled up. With right. the second F, you right. know, from it. She gets yeah. it now. So
yeah. Oh, that's funny. And talk me through, like, have you done any of the other like Queen service or any of that stuff, or what's been like, have you lost some weight since you've been in, right?
Yeah. Yes. Lost some, gained some,
yeah.
found
yeah.
some new,
yeah.
yeah. yeah. A little
new,
bit
new places.
Yeah. I've never done Queen service.
Okay.
And, I've always had a mindset of not stepping on a scale.
Mm.
I don't know why. And that's, I think, served me pretty well in that, obviously, doctors, you get on the scale from time to time. I think my weight from when I was like a senior in high school, when I was a, you know, an active athlete, has, I've certainly ballooned up at one time, but like from where I'm at today, I'm within 10 pounds of where I was as like an 18-year-old. So I kind of feel like, well, I've kept that kind of in check. And
you just know if your pants are fitting tight.
For me, it's 100% about feel. Like, I don't need a number to tell me, or, you know, to a certain degree, a doctor's report to tell me how I'm feeling.
Right.
You know, like, it, if I can look in the mirror and see when I've been lazy. I can, when we go out for a run, I can tell when I maybe haven't been doing what I need to do.
Body talks back.
Like I said, I know my body, I know its limitations, and I know when those limitations are, hey, you're being kind of fat and lazy, not not, hey, you physically need to watch yourself. And so I haven't dove into the clean service piece of it. And I'm not against it, you know, at all. I think it's a great thing, and certainly from the motivation standpoint, but I didn't really enter into F3 with the mindset of, I need to drop 15 pounds. This is the way to do it. Or, you know, for me, it was just kind of the total immersion of what it was. And so,
this time of year is so hard for me. I've never been, I'm always trying to out king my queen, you know, what they say. And I've never, there's maybe been some pockets where I'll do like intermittent fasting or some sort of like queen type of thing. But this time of year with Halloween candy, and then you get into the, you know, holiday season, and I'm sort of like, oh man, I got it. I want to try to do it, but I also don't want to be that guy that's like so picky about what I'll eat and not, you know, like if my kids want to go get ice cream or go hop over to the dairy chef over here, I'm going to get a Big Mike and I'm going to enjoy the heck out of that. And you know, so
I don't know. Absolutely.
Liberty Core Real Estate is your homegrown real estate broker. If you're looking to buy or sell real estate, whether personal or investment, Armando, aka Brian, and Megan Michaels Company is ready to serve you. With Command Center in Old Town Elkhorn and agents all throughout the metro, they are more than ready to guide and serve you in your next real estate endeavor. Whether your next move needs to happen now or in 5 years, call or text Armando at 402-770-2165 to get your questions answered. And a special offer for F3 Nation PAX members, Liberty Core will donate $250 to your sponsor of choosing for every closed transaction. Stop looking, start finding today with Liberty Core Real Estate.
So you're also a very social guy, right? And some of that is from maybe from your work a little bit, but when you came into F3, were there, so you would have been newer to town. So how'd you build relationships as you got?
Well, and that was maybe part of it is that, you know, in working in fundraising, you meet a lot of people, but it's hard sometimes to turn those into like true friendships. Right. And what's kind of cool about it is, you know, and like, I know your father-in-law through being a donor, you know, like him being a donor to UNO and
he still
and
can't figure out the ticket match.
Yeah, I don't know. And that's, don't call me today. Like I can't help you, but you know, even in that, like you meet people and what's kind of neat about it is you don't learn the value of the relationship until you're gone. And does it stay with you? You know, because in some cases it's just, well, that's the UNO guy. That's the hockey guy. That's the, the guy that helps me with my tickets. You know, and there's plenty of that. Again, it's not a knock on anybody, but there's also people that I met through UNO or through wherever that still call me, still, you know, we still chat with. And so, so that's kind of always been part of that experience of like, when you're the fundraising guy, you're asking people for money, like, you know, how much does that relationship, you know, really evolve and get built? But you know, we moved from small town Iowa. I'm not going to say we didn't need a social life because in small town Iowa, like everything is your life. Like there's not real separation. You know, you kind of, your neighbors are your friends or, you know, you know, one of our closest friends when we lived in Iowa was a 90-year-old retired school teacher who lived across the street from us. And, you know, he'd sit with my son at basketball games and talk, you know, like that was kind of, that was normal. You didn't really have to be intentional about it. We moved to Omaha and kind of realized, we don't, you know, we got great neighbors and on our block and all that, but like there's not a lot beyond that. And so I didn't go into it seeking this is how I'm going to socialize my life, but it really did help in Omaha, you know, especially with the packs that we have and the men that we have, and in particular West Omaha. Like I obviously can't speak to Sarpy or, you know, the East Side, like I never lived there. I know you were, you know, in the East Side for a while. But In Westo, that's really embraced, and I've been very fortunate to grow my social life in Omaha through F3.
Yeah. When you think about like male loneliness or kind of some of that stuff,
yeah.
How do you feel like, what's been your journey with that? Do you feel like having key friends has been impactful?
I'm not shy.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just, yeah. My wife will say this all the time, you know, like I can walk into a room and make friends.
Yeah.
And like, yeah. Doesn't matter what the setting is. And that's kind of by nature for me. Mm-hmm. Like you can't do fundraising work if you're not, if you're afraid to approach somebody.
Wait for them to come to you.
Yeah. Like that's not exactly a great strategy to raise money. So that has to just kind of be an innate ability to do that. So I can find ways to flourish. I can find ways to, you know, to grow friends. But for me, I was always really close inner circle, you know, before I knew of the Concentrica, I was like, I really didn't have anything beyond like that third, fourth layer type of thing. I wasn't really seeking that out. And F3 has given me that cool. there's this next level of friendship that, you know, will be there. And is there, whether they know you or not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I get to travel around a lot and I get to post downrange a lot over this past year. And that's where it's really shined true for me. Mm. You know, not that we don't have it great in Omaha, because we absolutely do. But when I've gone to other cities and truly met strangers, you know, people that I don't know and I might not ever see again.
Right.
The embrace, the opening. I was in Seattle a couple of weeks ago. Ferrari was the guy that I met out there, and he's they have kind of a new region. He's kind of like in a Nantan type role. Do a beat down, go to coffee. So, you know, we didn't exactly talk during the beat down. We were kind of, you know, back and forth, whatever, but in less than an hour's time, he's offering me a bed in his home the next time I come out there.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't happen.
Right.
Outside of F3.
Yeah.
I don't believe that it does. Like, you know, like that's that connection, but you know a person if they're in F3 before you know them.
Yeah.
And that part of it is really cool. And from the social standpoint of it, it's not lost on me how special that is and the honor that is. And it's somebody that, like, again, wouldn't struggle to meet people. Mm-hmm. I recognize the depth of the relationships we get through this.
I was just talking to Bernie about this same kind of thing that, like,
talk about a jerk.
No. Wait, yeah, that guy. but you should talk to him. He likes to give money away to people. No, but he, we were talking about like when a guy is in F3, you already know so much about them just because, you know, they're trying to get better, right? They're willing to show up early in the morning and put in some hard work, right? To make themselves better. And then if a guy is sticking with F3 to the point where they're a site queue or an Antan or queue in a workout, then you kind of have more information and you're just sort of like able to trust people before you even know that much about them. It's wild.
It's some people probably look at it as dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, and like
maybe
here I am, use me as an example. I fly to Seattle a couple of weeks ago and I go to a park in the dark.
Yeah.
And there's some guys there and I'm like, hey, can I join you? You know, right, I mean, and it's not that. Like I had reached out, but I mean literally you could look at it, that's what it is. Yeah. And you do that without hesitation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just the mindset of the people to do that, you know, you can trust them. You just absolutely know you can. Now you're going to be best friends. You don't have to be.
Right.
But there's that inherent trust that comes with
it. Yeah. I was at a conference one time and we're in the small group session. This guy introduced himself and part of his intro was, I'm so-and-so, I'm from Northwest Indiana and I do this cool workout thing called F3. And I'm like, me too.
Hey,
you know? Yeah. So of course we find, like, we meet up afterwards, like, let's post tomorrow. We're in San Diego. We find this AO. And we have this Uber driver take us to this AO that's like at a school, you know, so it's super sketchy.
Yeah,
super
you tell an Uber driver, drop me off at a
school. These two guys from some hotel get
dropped
off.
Did you have the mustache when you did that?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Because that Uber driver didn't exercise great judgment.
Well, so we get there and there's nobody there.
Yeah.
So then me and this guy that just met each other at this conference, we're like, all right, well, I'll queue half of it. You queue the other half. And so then we just did our own workout and, of course, posted and tweeted at the region. But it's just like, I never met this guy before.
Right? Yeah.
Like, we're in a place I don't live, you know, but we're just totally comfortable and confident that we're going to conquer the world. But what you mentioned family a little bit. Give us sort of breakdown of your families. How many kids you have you and your wife. You talked a little bit about that, but mm-hmm. Would love to kind of hear like maybe how has F3 impacted that Concentrica for you?
Yeah. Yeah. Wife and I have been married 15 years.
Nice.
We met in grad school working as grad assistants in college athletics, which is kind of the, oh, it's not shocking to see, you know, we spend mm-hmm. so much time working and stuff. And, just developed a really good relationship that, and I'll keep this on family as well, but was a big part of it was rooted in faith mm-hmm. and, you know, discussions that we had and kind of the, you know, we're both single grad students,
right?
Not single sophomores.
Yeah.
You know, where like, there's just like the maturity of it when you're 22, 23 years old is different. And mm-hmm. that's, so our, you know, our relationship was really born out of a friendship and God was present in it. Mm. And that was a big part of it. And so, I grew up Catholic. I was, Catholic schooled first through 12th grade. And, my wife grew up Lutheran and we had some honest discussions about faith and religion as a family. A lot with what you've done with the Whetstone podcast and stuff with, Dred's words really rang true to me about how he views, the shield lock and, you know, their take of, you know, we have to believe in the same thing. Mm-hmm. We don't have to believe, you know, maybe the doctrine and all that, but you know, that Jesus died on the cross for us and that's, he's our savior and that's enough, you know, sometimes that. And that was kind of where, you know, I started a process like, well, we're both Christian. We're both, you know, and, and that really evolved, you know, our relationship evolved kind of out of that. It's like, we're aligned there.
Yeah.
And our goals in life, then, you know, we're similar things we wanted to do, wanted to have a family, wanted to have God as a presence, you know, in our, mm-hmm. in our home, in that. And so, that was just a big foundational piece for us. Yeah. The small sidebar story there is my wife was Lutheran. I was Catholic. One of my best friends. So I did undergrad and grad school at the same university.
Okay.
And so one of my best friends from undergrad, she was Lutheran. So I got to know her pastor really well, which turned out to be the same denomination that my wife went to. So I knew her pastor before she did.
Oh, nice.
And then he ended up, he married us. He was our marriage counselor. And so
did
like,
you convert to?
I did. Yeah. Okay. Yep. And it was that idea.
You made the right choice.
I says it was easy for me. The analogy I use is that, you know, I was Catholic schooled. Grew up in the Catholic church. Lutheran is just the Diet Cola of Catholicism. So like, Catholic, I cut the calories out.
Catholic light. You know,
yeah. It's Catholic light. And so, but it was also that, like, it wasn't like there was this huge big debate where like we wanted to be a one church home.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got some really family and friends that have, you know, split husbands, wives that are different churches and it can work for them. It absolutely can. We that wasn't in the cards for us. Mm-hmm. So, having a pastor in our life that, mentored us, worked with us, talked with us was huge and really set a strong foundation. And again, that's not what everybody needs, but I think having that mentorship was really important for us. So
awesome.
long off ramp there.
I love it. And I just love that you talked about that stuff before getting married.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you look at marriages that end in divorce and you're sort of like, I could have seen that coming.
Right? Yeah.
Like, let's talk about these things before we decide to, you know, to get married. And hopefully if we are getting younger guys into F3, hopefully we can sort of like teach them like, hey, these are the things that you need to be.
Yeah. And it's interesting you say that. Again, go back to my kids here in a second, but I've had a couple of the younger guys and I don't want to name them just because they were vulnerable and brave enough to be vulnerable and that have just kind of asked, you know, hey, like they've seen Rizzo out at Beatdowns. Mm-hmm. They've seen like, and just kind of people that are asking like, how do you do that? What do you, you know?
Yeah.
So it's out there. Like there's that willingness to learn. And I look at it and say like, I came into F3 in my, you know, late 30s,
mm-hmm.
Which kind of feels like maybe that sweet spot, like, guys doing it in their 20s and like I've learned that's why we say hate because they've got the cheat code of life of getting it so young.
Right, yeah.
And I appreciate that not only are they showing up, but they're asking the questions.
Right.
Because I do that same thing of guys like Slow Clap and Mulligan and Q-Tip and like all of these great, you know, mm-hmm. respect guys that we have that just open up their, and Frosty, I'd be remiss if I didn't say Frosty as well, but that have just opened up their hearts to us as young fathers still, you know, mm-hmm. we are like we're in our 40s. We got a long ways to go. We still got high school and college ahead for our kids.
Yeah.
But it's great to see that with the with these young PAX members that recognize the cheat code they have for life. So
yeah.
But yeah, back on my kids then. Yeah. I've got my daughter just turned 9 last week.
Okay.
So we had kind of a extended birthday weekend. Yeah. And family, grandparents were in, all that. Lots of fun. And then Rizzo, who's known by many PAX members.
Yeah.
Rizzo is 12. Great kids that get F3. Mm-hmm. They've both been out. Rizzo's been out. I mean, I'm using his F3 name, not his real name.
Rizzo, I feel like, has been like a 10-time recipient of the Mighty Mazer Award, right?
He's gotten a few times. I mean, for people that wouldn't know this, and there would only be about, what, 8 other guys that would know, Plague, you queued his birthday this past year, his 12th birthday.
Awesome.
And it was a miserable day. It was snow and cold, and he was off school that day.
Yeah.
And he's like, I want to post on my birthday. And he goes, I want to go to the maze. I said, I'm going to be miserable. And Plague's on the queue. Like, I go, I don't know if I want you. No, I'm like, it's going to be tough. It's going to be probably one of the toughest beat duns you've ever done. And he goes, I don't care. That's where I want to go.
That's funny.
And he loved it. He just absolutely loved it.
Wasn't that
and
hard.
It was not. It was fun. Like, we kept sliding on that hill. And
I'm getting more lenient in my old age.
You know? I just remember that day, Zamboni bragging about his shoes that he never slips in. And I don't think that guy made it up the hill and clean once.
That was so fun. And then he got the Mighty Mazer Award.
And then Rizzo got the Mighty Mazer from Slow Pitch that day, which was, again, cool. And Slow Pitch and Tater Tot have gotten to know Rizzo pretty well because they... Rizzo likes to go to the flag passes and he's disappointed when he can't get to coffee.
Yeah.
Which is funny because we talk so much about that in Omaha. And I think, you know, we recognize that not every region does that the same way and we don't need to get down that road, but we do it so well here that my 12-year-old is like, I want to be there. Because he goes, I just love listening to people talk.
Interesting.
Like he does. Like he's embraced it. And so my family has benefited great from F3. They're kind of all in on it. My M, she was supportive of it from day one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she works from home, so flexibility for her schedule.
That's great.
Gives me flexibility where I can come in hot from coffee, I gotta shave, shower, get to work, and she's taking care of. She's keeping the household down because she recognizes, you know, what it is, and the biggest compliment she probably gave, was when I made the transition from college athletics to working at Boys Town now.
Yeah.
She told me after the fact, she goes, you know, if not for F3, you never would have done that. Mm. You never would have made that transition.
Yeah. She's
the confidence that I had from it, you know, in that college athletics, and this will sound like such a knock and I don't mean it to be, but it can be superficial. There's a very, you know, hierarchy, and are you aspiring to be the AD and you know, and your wins are wins. They're literal wins. There's not, you know, there's not this gray area. Like it's wins and losses. And that can be poison to some people.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it was poison to me, but I think my M would say I'm in a healthier spot that I was not comfortable getting to without F3.
Mm. Talk me through that. Cause I remember a couple conversations with you as you were kind of going through the process and just, it reminds me kind of what we've talked about on the Whetstone, right? With sort of like, how do I find my sort of D2X or whatever you call it. But what was that sort of process like for you as guys are thinking about, I feel like every guy's, we're sort of always thinking about our career and is what I'm doing having an impact. But what was your, for you?
I feel like I've had this really weird yet also kind of logical progression of my career that I think has led me to my D2X. I'm like, this is, and so, you know, it started out with, I was comfortable behind a microphone.
Yeah.
And so I went into broadcasting, you know, as a student. And then I'm like, well, I love sports. So I went into sports broadcasting.
Yeah.
And that leveraged me into getting a grad assistant position where I was doing some broadcasting and got my master's degree, met my wife.
Mm-hmm.
When I got done with grad school, they offered me, this is at Western Illinois, they offered me a full-time job to do football play-by-play. So I got, which was... At the time, I'm like, this is kind of the dream. You know, here I am at like 22, 23. I'm like, I've got my dream job. I'm getting to call football, like do football games on the radio. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But I learned through that, well, I can talk to a brick wall. Like, I don't need somebody. I don't need someone to be sitting there listening to me. I can just talk into a microphone and be fine. which is probably not a healthy
lots of ferns in there.
But anyways, they that led me to realizing, okay, well, if I can talk to nobody, then I can talk to people. And so it was that transition for me into fundraising was, well, I'm telling the story as it happens. Fundraising is just telling a story that's happened, you know, and, or what will happen type of thing. Like it's the same type of skills. And so then I go, well, there seems to be a little more jobs open in that world. I talked to a friend who at the time was at Oral Roberts University doing broadcasting. He's now the play-by-play guy at Texas Tech.
Okay.
Really successful guy, great individual, great family man. But I remember talking with him, and he had been in Oral Roberts for about 10 years, I think. And he goes, Brock, he's like, this is just exhausting. He goes, it's a grind. And he wasn't even a full-time employee.
Interesting.
He's doing basketball and baseball there. And I just looked at him. I'm like, gosh, I really respect this guy. I really look up to him. And he told me in the moment, he goes, I'm jealous of you because you have a full-time job in this. And I was like, wow, that was really eye-opening to me. And then made me realize, okay, what's your exit plan?
Right.
Because nothing's perfect. Nothing's permanent.
Right.
You never know when the carpet is going to get pulled off from underneath you. And I realized, hey, what else could I do? And fundraising was already kind of getting put on my plate. And so I did some more of it. And so it was kind of that, okay, I can do these things. I can talk with people. I can meet with people. And I leveraged that as much as I could. And again, the college athletics piece was, hey, you should become an AD. You should, you know, and I bought into that and I believed it. And I truly believe I would have been successful doing that. Like if I would have stayed that course, but got to the point here in college athletics today with the NIL stuff and everything that's going on is kind of a crazy world. And I just kind of had these moments where I'm like, is this really how my skills should be used?
Right.
Like, is this what God would want me to do? And the moment that I had that thought, that let me just see what's out there. And I pulled my phone out that night and I just searched development jobs in Omaha. Boys Town was the first one that popped up. And I had some general awareness of Boys Town, obviously, you know, we're there for the Oracle and all that, but I didn't really know the depth of what they did.
Right.
That sent me down the rabbit hole of, well, what is this? What am I really going to be doing? And then at the end of the day, missionality.
Yeah.
You know, the mission for Boys Town is changing the way America cares for children and families.
Like, I can get
find me a hole in there and we can have a talk. But like, you know, find me a gap in there that like you can't get behind on a daily basis. And so that was kind of it for me. And I think there's that realization of we're never further away from a leader's decision of, hey, you're gonna have to find a new job or you know, like those realities are real. We all could lose our jobs on a whim for the most part, you know, whatever. So you might as well do something that you care about, you know, because if you're going to really make a difference in the world and want to do that through your work, and not everybody has to. And I know that's a big part of what you guys talked about in the Whetstone is like, you don't have to have you know, that job. For me, I didn't think I did either.
Right.
I thought like, hey, I can do my job, college athletics and all this.
Yeah.
And then I can find my place elsewhere.
Yeah.
Well, but when I was able to kind of marry that all together, it really kind of woke me up and put me in a place where I'm just extremely grateful for what I have.
I can tell, cause what one of the, so we were talking about, on the Whetstone episode that we recorded last week, comes out actually tomorrow. We talked about Steve. And so Steve is the guy that's just doing what's right in furtherance of the mission
because
that's what he is there to do.
Yeah.
Right.
You do this task.
And I see that and hear that in you. Cause like in your episode of the COT podcast, like you just couldn't stop like talking about how great Boys Town is and all the stuff that they offer. And then even the other day, you came up to me after I had a COT about like suicide prevention and recovery awareness. And you're like, hey, by the way, Boys Town does this really cool thing. And so that is, to me, like that is so cool because not only do you find fulfillment out of that, but you're helping the organization achieve their mission.
Yeah.
And like you said, when that's their mission, like who doesn't want that?
Right? Yeah.
Who doesn't want the betterment of our family? So that's really cool.
Yeah. No, it is great. And it's, you know, I feel very fortunate.
You know,
God brought us to Omaha for a reason. I'm not going to say the final reason is for me to work at Boys Town.
Yeah.
But it certainly has put me on a different path in my career.
Yeah.
Which has led to me being, you know, more involved, in this community, you know, with it, and less transactional and more transformational.
Yeah. I, you know, just thinking that, like, hearing your story, right? Even, you know, back to this injury in high school and then just some of these moments, it sounds like your faith has been a huge part of that, right? Because you've sort of been in touch with, you know, either maybe it's Holy Spirit, God, call it whatever, but, you know, listening to your body, listening to sort of these nudges or urges of like, maybe I'll look into that.
Yeah.
Talk me through the faith piece. Like, where does that all fit in?
You know, it's interesting because, again, born and raised Catholic, and we were like I'd say your traditional suburban Catholic family.
Mm-hmm.
Like, our faith was strong. I wouldn't say, you know, we weren't the Christers. Like, we were in church almost every Sunday. You know, it was a part of our education growing up. You know, I went to parochial school, and so, you know, it was kind of always there. When I got to college, it was the first time I was at a public school in college. And I was a broadcasting major. And when you're a broadcasting major, you're kind of like, well, I really don't need anything else. Like, I'm going to go down this road. So I was a religious studies minor, which was an interesting thing. It's at Western Illinois, where I went for undergrad. It's a discontinued minor. Like, it's not, it's one of those ones that's gotten cut over the years. Like, and there's just not a high interest in it. Right. But it really kind of shaped my perspective of like, and I went into it with this, well, I've been Catholic. Like, and at that point I still was, and I didn't have an intention at that time of changing. I'm like, but I don't know anything about the world.
Yeah.
You know, like, I know what Catholicism is, and I know how to get an A on a theology test,
right?
In high school, but I don't know, like, I don't really, you know why we believe and why somebody wouldn't believe this and that. And so that part, you know, that time at the time where we're all probably our most vulnerable for change and influence, I was exploring world religions, not in the sense of I'm going to convert, but in the, why do people believe this? Why do they behave this way? Why do Muslims pray a certain time every day? Why, you know, all of these things you kind of start to learn. Don't quiz me on them all now. I don't have retained all of that, but but you start to learn these things about what faith really is.
Yeah.
Because we know it's not a religion, as we know in F3.
Right.
It's not. And so what does it look like? Why do we pray? What do we pray for? And so it really shaped my perspective on it, and opened my heart really to just kind of what I need to look at in the world. And it's a big part of that for me still today. I really, you know, try to focus on that. You know, how, as a parent, how do I instill faith without saying, this is what you believe? Yeah. You know, letting them get to their own conclusions. And I feel like my kids are getting there, and I try to be very intentional with that.
Yeah.
I remember at that time, gratitude, when I was in undergrad, gratitude became really apparent to me in religion. And I correlated that more to faith, that people that were gracious had strong faith. And that kind of came full circle when COVID hit, and we know everyone's isolated and locked down. We became intentional as a family. We'd pray before every meal, but we'd pray and then start scarfing our food right now. And we started a tradition that we still do it every time the four of us sit down, we pray. And then before we talk, we all do a thankful. And we just come with it. And I can promise you, when my daughter was 4 years old, that list was not, a little superficial, a little funny sometimes.
Yep.
But I just always feel like, you know, prayer and faith is got to be rooted in gratitude.
Yeah.
Because the fact that we're here is the blessing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just even here on this earth, that's the blessing.
Yeah.
And so, can we be thankful for what we have? And is sometimes that because you got a sucker at school? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, be grateful for that.
Yeah.
If that's what's on your heart, be thankful for that. And let's make sure that we thank God or whomever you pray to for what blessings you have. And that's just a big part of it for me and where my faith is at. And, you know, yes, it's rooted in the church and through my church. But it's also got to be more than that, because it can't just be a building or a pastor or a preacher. It's got to be something that's in your heart.
Yeah. Are you or someone you know in the market to buy a new home? Well, if so, check out Major Team Mortgage. They specialize in home purchase and refinance home loans. Their mission is to purposely empower people to experience their good life through building wealth with real estate. You know, showing up in the gloom is no different than showing up for a conversation around your future of building wealth with real estate. Join the action economy and get in the game with Sasquatch.
Text or call John at 402-212-0149 to schedule a time today. Individual NMLS number 1393750. Company NMLS number 2478164. Equal housing lender.
I would be curious as you came into F3, because it sounds like faith has always been a part of your life. Do you feel like, have you been able to share your perspectives with other guys, or do you feel like F3 has in a way helped strengthen your faith? Like, what's been kind of the, like, as you've gotten more involved in F3, how has that impacted your faith?
Yeah. I think, you know, growing up in the Catholic Church, sermons were very specific.
Oh yeah.
You know, like there's a methodology to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say this, I probably not until I got to college did I really start to like absorb the pastor's sermon.
Like the because, content.
Yeah. And I hope nobody takes this disrespect, but like the rest of the service is the service. Mm-hmm. You have a reading, like in most, it's certainly Christianity, you're going to have readings from the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And that Bible doesn't vary a whole lot. You know, right. It's like there might be a few tweaks here or there, or, you know, but those are going to be pretty, you know, pretty standardized. You're going to have some songs sung if you have a choir, or you have a music player, you know, but the sermon really kind of, you know, is that deliverable message and that takeaway.
Yeah.
And so I don't begrudge anybody that's able to quote Bible passages and do that. That was never my, you know, my goal with it. I've got passages that mean a lot to me.
Yeah.
But it's also like, well, I don't need to throw that on you,
right?
Because it might not mean anything to you. I found a lot of value. And again, this has been, you know, around the time that I was a religious studies minor and trying to think, I found a lot of value in just how can you handle the conversation of it?
Oh yeah.
You know, like what I believe in is yes, rooted in the Bible, rooted in faith, rooted in the church. But if you're not a Lutheran,
mm-hmm.
or if you're not born and raised Catholic like I was, your perspective is bound to be different. I mean, it's bound to be different anyways, but bound to be vastly different. So can I explain what I'm feeling in a way that's not doctrine driven?
Mm, yeah.
You know, now can I do that as well? Yeah. In many cases. But that part of the conversation of it is where, and I think in F3, you can make a safe assumption of Christianity for a lot of our members, but not all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of our men, you know, are going to be, but not all of them. And so what's that conversation going to look like? And can you do it in a way that relates to today? Because I think most people probably were. The Bible wasn't written in 2025 in Omaha, Nebraska. Right. It's you've got to be able to have some interpretation there. And we can quote passages and use them as foundation, but how do you interpret? How do you share that? And that's actually one of the things I love about like in the COTs
mm-hmm.
is some guys will use preaching and certain like, we have like sermon notes at our church and I take them, but it's funny. I write a whole bunch of stuff at the bottom.
Yeah.
And usually my COTs now are born out of the sermons that I hear, but it's more of like in the moment, what am I thinking?
Yeah.
How am I getting there? And trying to share that. So
I love it. It's so cool. And I love that you called out the being able to have conversations with other people about what they believe. You know, I always think back to like the college campus crusade, you know, go talk to somebody and read these three pages, and then all of a sudden, boom, they're, mm-hmm. you know, they've been changed, you know, and I, you know, it's funny because that's not, I don't think I've ever heard a story of that happening to somebody.
No.
I'm sure maybe it has once or twice, but like most of the time, especially in F3, you know, F3 is a really safe place for a guy to sort of like not know what he believes or not be firm in that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got to be prepared to talk through wherever a guy is at, and not in a way, to your point, not in a way that's like, here are these verses, now believe it, you know, it's just like understanding like what have you been through, you know, in your life? Cause I think we find a lot of guys that have been to church or grew up in a certain religion mm-hmm. and have fallen away for one reason or another. And they're not looking for the church sales pitch. They're just looking for authenticity and guys to be real about, like, you know. So I love what you shared.
Yeah. And if you haven't read the Bible, that passage doesn't probably mean a lot to that person. You know, it might mean something to you because you've read it, but that other person, if they don't know what Psalm 21 is, the fact that you can recite it doesn't mean a whole lot to them, really. Right, you know, exactly.
Yeah.
So
I would be curious, because also on the third F side is this idea of community service.
Yeah.
Obviously you work for Boys Town. I would definitely encourage guys to go listen to that COT podcast, because you went into quite a bit of depth, but maybe just at a high level, like talk us through where do you see Boys Town and sort mm-hmm. of F3 kind of connecting on that mission?
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, superficially when I started, you know, I'd go to the Oracle and didn't really know what was going on there, yeah. you know, to a large extent. And I would say 95% of Omaha doesn't really know the full work at Boys Town. Yeah. It's probably even a higher number than that,
yeah.
you know, with it. And we are more than Father Flanagan's home for boys or for kids, right. you know, but a lot of people see it that way of like, oh, all these troubled youth. And, you know, the analogy that I always say is like, there's the commercial for the animal shelters with the Sarah McLachlan yeah. song playing and all that. It's yeah, like
really sad.
Like, yeah. I'm like, too. Like, I think people generally kind of associate Boys Town that way of like, oh, we take in all of these sad cases and we do, and we still get kids that are neglected and, yeah. That nobody else wants from all over the country that have done bad things and done, mm-hmm. That is how we started. Father Flanagan started Boys Town in 1917 with that of kids that were ousted on the streets mm-hmm. because it was necessary, and it's still necessary today. But the evolution of it has also been, okay, he wanted to understand why they were bad.
Right.
He wanted to understand why they ended up on the streets, you know, why they did what they did. And that evolved us into pediatric healthcare and neuroscience research and psychology and psychiatry and a mental health hotline, which you alluded to earlier. Mm-hmm. So there's all these other services that you say, okay, how do you go from, and again, most people would say, oh, you're an orphanage, right? Like you just yeah. take in these homes. Like, no. How do you go from that? Like, well, we go from that because the goal wasn't to take kids in. The goal was to better kids.
Right.
And the goal is still today to better kids.
To leave no man behind.
It's 100% F3. Yeah. It is yeah. like, and I'm certain I love Wait Time. I love talking with him. I'm certain he didn't know the depth of it when he launched
right.
F3. Maybe he did.
But how ironic.
Yeah, but how ironic that the site that he launched it on was at one time in Omaha's history, a farm, not in Omaha,
right.
in unincorporated West farmland outside, yeah. you know, outside of the town, that the farm would be converted to a home where neglected kids would come in, but it were kids that were all kids were welcome.
Yeah.
Race, religion, creed. Oh. And it parallels so much with how F3 welcomes anybody in. Mm-hmm. We don't turn you away, and you come in with problems. Great. We're going to love on you the same way.
Yeah.
We're not going to say no. We're going to find somebody that is like you. We're going to find somebody that can help you along. We're going to pick you up. And when you're the six, you're going to have somebody there with you. Boys Town does that. Hmm. It's just the vernacular is a little different.
Yeah.
But that's what they do. They pick up the six in the world. And find ways to make sure that we can reduce the six mm-hmm. in the future. And that's our medical research and our pediatric hospital. And we've got big expansion going on there right now,
yeah.
all for the betterment of, can we expand our reach to the world? Because it's not about, do we bring more kids into Omaha that are troubled? It's, can we prevent there from being yeah. troubled kids elsewhere?
Yeah. It's so cool. I did my, in nursing school, I did some of my clinicals at Boys Town mm-hmm. and they had would have been like an inpatient behavioral health mm-hmm. area for kids. And you just, yep. you know, talking with some of the, they were like counselors, but had some, you know, special training and just thinking like, what happens to these kids if Boys Town isn't there?
Yeah.
You know, and I yeah. just remember, you know, some of the papers and things that I wrote for school, just, it is still a problem. There mm-hmm. are still children out there that are, being given up on. I don't know if that's the right way to, but
it is
in a sense, you know, and who knows what their parents are going through or what they've done or whatever, yeah. but they're sort of like,
we have, it's a little bit of the, you know, PR push here, but you know, of this, the space you're talking about, our regional treatment center, is where we do some of that high level care, mm-hmm. long-term care for kids. We have 80 beds in our regional treatment center, which accounts for, and the exact number eludes me now, but it's north of 80% of the beds in the state of Nebraska.
Yeah.
That level of care.
Yeah.
That's all at Boys Town. So there's the need for more.
And they're always full, I'm sure.
They are. We are always at what our capacity can be.
Yep.
And that's a challenge because there's more kids that need care than what we can provide and what other spaces across the state can provide. So most of the kids end up here because just we have the volume space to handle it, but we don't have enough at the same time.
Well, I love it. We could talk all day
about
that problem. I do think, though, thinking about leadership and our mission, right, invigorating male community leadership, and just thank you for leading in the community. I think that's the coolest thing to me, is when you see this sort of connection of your mission and your mammon, and you just are like, you know, just taken off. Like, it's just truly this picture of a man being unlocked. So it's super cool. But talk me through being a site queue and sort of what that experience was like. And
it was interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I approached Billboard about it.
Yep.
And just to back up a little bit, mine and Billboard's relationship, our daughters are classmates.
Okay.
And so when we moved to Omaha, my daughter was starting kindergarten. Rizzo was in fourth grade, and he had a little bit of a struggle. You know, it's a tough time for a kid to move. My daughter was starting kindergarten. She's a social butterfly. Yeah. Like, she just rolled right into it. And so I'm running one day at, it was Block Party or Top Rope.
Mm.
And I'm running with Billboard, and I hadn't met him really. And we're talking, and your kid goes to Fire Ridge. My kid goes to Fire Ridge. And he goes, oh, you're Ellie's dad. You know, just like, it clicked. And so, like, we had this just instant connection right then because of our daughters. And so, you know, chatting, staying close, he launches the Calm and then moves to Spain, you know, shortly thereafter. So I don't know how long it was before he knew they were going to move. I reached out to him because I was hesitant to even pursue taking a flag when I was working in college athletics.
Yeah.
It's a tough schedule. You kind of know it, but you kind of don't, and events and all this. And like, I just didn't feel like I could devote what it needed.
Mm-hmm.
Not time, but like mental, you know, mentally and I finally reached a point where I'm like, just got to do it.
Yeah.
So I approached him about it, and he goes, and explained the whole situation. So it got accelerated because he didn't hit his 1 year on passing the flag because of when he moved. And so kind of got thrown into it. Not quickly, but like kind of like, you know, at an odd time, out of sync, you know, all this. And it was great at the start because the Calm was really successful early on. He did a great job launching it. And then the evolution of it then kind of turned sour because we started to run into issues with access to the track and to the turf fields at Elkhorn South High. And it was nothing directed at F3. F3 didn't do anything wrong. Nobody was out to get us. But the majority of my year of leadership was really kind of sent around, well, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
You know, are we going to stay here? Are we going to be locked out this week? And there was times where, we had to modify into the parking lot because we couldn't get on the turf or on the track. And so, as the end was nearing for me, I kind of realized, okay, my legacy is, can I fix this? You know, can I make this something better? And Rizzo is at Valley View Middle School, which is just across 204th from Elkhorn South High. And so I went and talked to the principal there about it, and he just embraced it.
Oh, cool.
He was like, F3, he goes, this sounds awesome. Actually, before he even said, yes, you can come here, he asked if he could join.
Oh.
And so he,
has he been out yet?
So he EH'd on the flag pass day.
Oh, cool.
He came out, and he's been, I think he's missed one day at the Calm since when it was storming.
Oh, yeah.
But what was really cool about it, and again, this is where I'm like, okay, well, you know, as the leadership, you know, what did I do? Because there was a moment where I had the negative thoughts come in where I'm like, I failed. You know, like we had to move. We had, you know, and it was never doom and gloom type of thing. But I'm like, you know, like, but the realization of, no, we got the Calm to where it needs to be.
Yeah.
At the right place where they embrace it. What's really cool about it is Ozark and Gator and Boji, Fridge, they all live in that neighborhood. They all know the principal.
Oh, cool.
So when he came out, they were all going up to him because he was the national principal of the year last year, something like that. And so
he's good.
Vespo was doing the construction at the middle school when we moved the site, and then we did the flag pass, and he threw that out there. And then, so he became Gold Star. He's the principal So, and like, and he's been back and he's bought in, and obviously he's a high school or a middle school educator. Like, he can't post with regularity,
right.
But he comes to the Calm every week cause that's his school. And he goes and
he's there,
goes and he can't stay for coffee. He goes and gets coffee. Then he goes back and showers up and goes about his day. But, so, you know, getting to have his name attached to mine as an EH story is pretty cool. You know, the PsyQ portion of it, the leadership, I share that because again, that's like, I feel like that was the big thing I did. The PsyQ portion of it, you know, was great. It was a lot of fun. I shared this in my COT at the Flag Pass. I cherished the days where we had like six guys.
Yeah.
We had some of those, you know, bad weather, flag passes, Speed Bump would always steal guys out to Beacon Valley routinely. Like everyone's going to Beacon Valley. But the calm really kind of lived up to its name. It was just, you know, and it wasn't that it was easy, but it was just this place. And I know you got a queue coming up there soon.
Yeah.
And, it was just this, it's this place that, and I think that's what Billboard intended, where conversation could happen.
Yeah.
And what's cool about it, and we all know this, is like, you can have 20 guys at a site and you're going to talk to a few and be like that. But when you have a beat down with five or six guys, it might feel like a failure. And as a queue, and I was sure to encourage our queues on that. I'm like, it's not, you didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
You did everything right.
Right.
If you've got people talking and they took something away from it. And, so I value that portion of it. Like, I don't know what the numbers were. I never really cared.
Yeah.
I could take the value of what my leadership for the site was based on what the quality of the conversation was every week at the site and then at coffee. And I was very intentional about that I would be at coffee and would be involved and make sure that people got something out of that in addition to the beatdown itself. So
I love it. It is. And I think almost every guy goes through that. You know, it's funny. We moved, I feel like Icy Hot. So I launched Paradise Island, right? Icy Hot moved it. And then Mayday moved it. And, you know, and it's just like whatever the packs
it
need,
happens,
right? Yeah. And if you're running into issues where this, you know, you can't get in or whatever, just, you know, I don't think guys realize that that's okay. Like sometimes it feels like, oh, but this is the flag, you know, and it's like we can move the pin on the website and you know, you just communicate.
Which is a little more challenging than we learned when we had a long text thread going but it worked.
F3 Nation map, we got that figured out. But also the, you know, it's small workout groups, right?
Yeah.
Is the mission. And I think it's easy to get caught up in like success means more numbers.
Yeah.
But like I love, you know, it's like, am I stewarding these men and sort of guiding these relationships? And I love, we've had over the years different sites kind of experience different things. And one of my favorite things to do, and Hard Hat is really good at this because he comes up with the goofiest questions. But if you ever do a beatdown where you've got stations with questions and you and to try to get guys to kind of talk and
do that all the time.
Oh, just build those relationships.
Yeah, I haven't done it in a while, but like when I started queuing early on, I had questions on the exercises all the time. Yeah. It's the best.
You hear guys make those connections and you're like, you know, that's what it's all about, right?
Just
giving guys that confidence.
I think people that have been to multiple of my beatdowns would say they probably experienced one of two things.
Hmm.
One, the mandate, not encouragement, mandate of mumble chatter.
Yeah.
Like it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Or Broga.
Yeah.
And Broga, because usually that actually brings out a little bit of mumble chatter too, but like, that intentionality in time of like, hey, let's be present, you know, with where we're at. I greatly value that, about F3, that we can have those moments. And bigger is not better.
Yeah.
You know, you do lose something when you have 30 guys together.
Yeah.
There's a time and place for that.
Yeah.
And it certainly, but to anybody that's queuing, you know, doing a VQ, usually I think we've been pretty good about VQs supporting guys, you know, lately, making sure they have a little crowd, but like there's no reason to be discouraged.
Yeah.
Because there's a few guys there. Like my favorite beatdown as site queue was and I brought this up in my COT at Flag Pass. Edger mentioned it. Me, Edger, Cadbury, and Jukebox. I think every other site closed down that day because it was like snow lightning, you know, going. And we kind of had a safer area where it was kind of out of the elements a little bit up on a loading dock. And we had so much fun.
Yeah.
Like we're getting pelted in the face with ice. But I'll never forget that day. And I know they won't either.
Yeah.
And it was four of us.
That's a really
fun just had, and we went and got coffee afterwards and it was fun.
Yeah. I love it. Well, man, I just love hearing your story and just I have to say thank you for your leadership. I think it's so cool. Kind of like I was saying, right? When, you know, you see a guy get, you know, unlocked and then sort of like over time find his mission and then pair that with, you know, the work that he gets to do every day and the way that you're leading men. I know you're also doing some stuff in like a second or third F role.
Second F, yeah.
I feel like I heard you the other day have this coolest idea of like an evening Q source. Yep. And I was like, why didn't I ever think of that?
Yeah.
It's so cool. But you're doing third F stuff now?
Second F. Okay. So I joined the West Omaha leadership team. And yeah. So like from the second F standpoint right now, we're kind of sector, but basically yeah. Long neck's kind of heading up our second F.
Yep.
And then myself, Limu and Walleye.
Okay.
So the four of us are kind of tackling the second F stuff for Westo. And nice. So doing a few things there. We've done cigar nights, we've done mm-hmm. poker nights, we've done, you know, and we kind of have some good momentum now. Like really getting guys out and that worked, and Walleye, this great idea of donuts with dads, like at the park.
I've
like
heard
like
of
just
that.
Fun
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
So but the Q source thing that we're launching here, I had this realization that, you know, Dicka is another one that mm-hmm. our daughters are classmates and really yeah. good friends, and him and I are in a shield lock, just the two of us, and kind of actually yeah. based off the Whetstone discussion nice. and what Dredd and Dark Helmet talk about of like intentionality of who you're with in that, like
yeah.
you know, really being intentional about, is it the person, people that you're kind of aligned with, and so his brother though has joined Corn Palace. I don't know if you've come across Corn
yeah.
Palace.
Yeah, yeah,
so that's Dick's brother, and he works down in Gretna.
Okay.
And I think it's like he's got to be in, like clocked in by 7 a.m.
Okay.
So coffee's a
no
zero option ever. Uh-huh. You know, he lives up here, got to get down there. So it's a zero option for him ever. And I'm like, that sucks. You mm-hmm. know, like to miss out on coffee is mm-hmm. is bad. And then I like step back. I'm like, well, you miss out on coffee, you miss out on Q source.
Mm-hmm.
And I was grateful when I started, and I live near the Whetstone. I live right by Elkhorn South High, so mm-hmm. Whetstone was really close, so I'd go there. And what was great about it, with the 5:15 start, I had a little more time to do yeah. coffee, and so T-ball was the site queue at that time. We're doing yeah. Q source, and like I grew so much in those conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's experience has to be their own,
mm-hmm.
but I want to make sure people can experience that same type of growth that I have. And the thought that guys who have to get to work
mm.
miss out on Q source entirely,
right?
Like, kind of broke my heart when I really like yeah. went down. Like, man, like this was such a transformative thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
Is that available to everybody? And when I realized, no, it's not, because right. just by nature of how we do it, and
yeah.
every week, and you know, all that. And so, yeah, we're getting ready to launch here in a couple of weeks, an evening Q source where we're going to condense, you know, the chapters down, and
yeah.
probably go like 90 minutes,
yeah,
with a session, and hit on multiple topics, but get that discussion going, you know, with it. And again, as we record this today, we haven't done it yet.
we'll
but
see,
I, yeah. but the positive response from PAX members about it has been awesome. And I'm really excited to see where that goes, because my real hope is that it will allow us to unlock people that aren't able to get to Q source right now,
yeah.
or just even coffee, whether it's a Q source or not, just able to have that second F experience of the true fellowship and growth through it.
Yeah. Yeah, I love the idea that, you know, it's how do you take the core principles and specifically open to all men, and then just mm-hmm. keep pressing forward?
Yeah.
Like what else are their barriers?
Yeah.
What else can we, yep. you know, reduce the barrier to entry, and
yeah.
just finding those things, and then, okay, let's try this. You
yeah.
know, I, super cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, we do it all the time with, you know, people excuse, I'm not a morning person, or I can't get up. And
yeah.
like, we just press and make them,
mm-hmm.
you know, do it. And
yeah.
so, you can't get around people's work schedules or, yeah. or home schedules or whatever. But if we can give that, if we can take that excuse away, hey, I can't make Q source because I got to get home. Great. How about you come to this
yeah.
one? You know, like, here's your chance to grow. Yeah. Like let's be open to all
Start
men that way.
Yeah. The barriers.
Yep.
Well, I love it. I would be curious, kind of as we land the plane here, where do you currently need prayers or support? Or,
you know, I talked about this earlier, kind of how mm-hmm. what I lead with prayer, and for me, it's always the gratitude first.
Mm.
So, you know, I feel like in an investment standpoint,
mm-hmm.
if you show enough gratitude when you do need something,
mm-hmm.
it's you can ask for it.
Yep.
You know, like it's kind of that investment in others. Like when you need something in return,
yeah.
have you done it, you know, first? And so, you know, my family's very blessed.
Mm-hmm.
We've, you know, I dealt with a torn ligament in my thumb this summer, and you know, my my M had a little bit of a health scare, and you know, we've got some continuations of that that we're dealing with right now. She had some internal issues, and it was actually the weekend that leadership was in town from F3.
Oh, wow.
And it took me away from being able to be, you know, any of that stuff. And in that moment, and again, true to the shield lock, Ditka was aware of what was going on. Yeah. You know, and my kids actually stayed at his house, and, you know, because we were overnight at the hospital unexpectedly. I share all that to say, in that moment, I didn't have to ask for prayers. Mm. They came.
Yeah.
You know, and so, I think it'd be selfish of me right now to be like, hey, I need prayers for this. Because I don't.
Yeah.
There's so many other PAX members that are going through things that they need prayers for. And I know likewise, they're not necessarily asking for them, but they're getting them.
Yeah.
And so with where I'm at today, I don't have a request for me. Mm. It'd be for others, but my prayer would be one of gratitude that I'm fortunate to have F3, to have F3 Omaha, to have people like you, and everybody in F3 that is there for me, that again, I know when I do need the prayers, I don't have to ask. Yeah. They'll be there.
Yeah, that's super cool. Well, I appreciate it, man. And thank you so much again for your leadership, for telling your story. I know guys will be impacted by this. And I think, just really inspiring. So we'll do a little Nemo to end us out. Absolutely. Here. Brandon Fleaherty, 39, The Plague.
The Plague. Brock Wismiller, 40, bogey.
Bogey four, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's it. I think that's cool. Fridge started it.
I don't know. If your nickname was Venmo, you'd have to be like, cha-ching.
Yeah. It wouldn't work as, yeah.
Which then wouldn't,
like I said, I've got a call sign and it works.
So. Yeah. I love it. Well, thanks, man.
All right. Thanks, buddy. Man's got a story. Oh, finding grace in the highs and the lows. Every man's got a story. Yeah. We're not alone. We're not alone. Every man's got a story. Finding grace in the highs and the lows. Every man's got a story. Yeah, we're not alone. We're not alone. From the fire to the freedom. From the struggle to the song. We're all walking out the journey. But we don't walk alone. To the freedom, from the struggle to the song, we're all walking out the journey, we don't walk alone. Story.